Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. Today we're joined by James Martinez, who survived the, I believe it was a Category 5 storm that came out of nowhere and struck Acapulco. And today we're going to talk about geoengineering and globalist vectors against humanity, and also about low-energy nuclear reactions, LENR, which used to be called cold fusion. A lot of topics all rolled into one, and James Martinez seems to be at the epicenter of a lot of what's going on. So welcome, James. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for the invite. Oh, as always.
You are lucky to be alive right now.
That's true. That's very true.
Tell us about what you just experienced in Acapulco.
I was invited to Mexico and encouraged to go to Mexico many times over the last couple of years. And I have friends in Mexico that have vested interest in seeing the next generation of energy power come to life in Mexico in the form of LENR, as we've discussed here before, otherwise known as cold fusion. And I was invited down there, and I initially went down there to participate in the eclipse. And then after the eclipse, I was invited to Acapulco by some very influential people in Mexico. The owner of an estate called Villa Arabesque, which is located in Acapulco. It's the most influential residence in that area. It's a very famous place. They shot one of the James Bond films there, License to Kill. It's absolutely beautiful place. And I arrived in Acapulco the evening before, and I had gone out onto the bay, onto a boat with some of these influential people in Mexico. And I was mentioning to my friends there that the infrastructure of Acapulco should change, without really knowing that there was going to be a storm at all. Though when we were on the boat, the yacht, there seemed to be the beginning of like what looked like heavy rainfall. And not too long after getting off the boat, I was inside the estate, which is a very, very sophisticated architectural landmark in Acapulco, but it's also made of solid concrete generally, and it's very a heavy duty structure. So that evening, I was invited out with my friends and others to a local restaurant there, and I took my first and last look of Acapulco in the evening. And I was looking at all the lights at night across the bay and kind of admiring the new city. I'd never been there before. And slowly we started to feel the generation of a lot of wind. So, you know, I didn't take it seriously at that point. And it's my understanding that anytime there's going to be a major storm, sophisticated storm, that the public's informed of that. So that took place, but it was played down. So the people that are with, that are influential people in the community, said, okay, let's go back to the house and have some drinks and relax. And then as we were sitting on the opening area, which overlooks the bay, the wind factor went up tremendously. At about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and the people that I were with, we really didn't think it would go to a Category 5. But then, right about midnight or so, my colleagues of mine got phone calls saying, get out of there, get out of there, get out of there. And there was no place for us to really go to get out of there. We were guests at the house, and we took shelter inside the residence on the very opposite end of it. This is a huge structure and a very famous architectural landmark. And there's a very, very massive old tree in front of this estate, which no longer exists.
We're showing some photos, by the way, James, while you're talking. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah,
we're just going to show some photos that come up on Brave.
When we woke up in the morning, we realized that the tree actually saved our life because it was covering the front portion of the estate where we're staying. All the rooms were flooded. And when we woke up in the morning, a lot of us didn't sleep, but I walked outside and it looked like what you see in the pictures. Complete, utter, total devastation.
I mean, it looks like a bomb went off.
Yeah. Well, this is where it gets interesting to me because I was very suspicious of the reason why the port authorities or the city of Acapulco or the government of Acapulco did not warn the public about what happened. And as soon as I began to look around, there was no sound outside. There were no airplanes. There was no rescue anything. There was nothing. Acapulco was officially destroyed entirely. All the boats in the bay, including the one that I was on the previous day, had sunk. And it was very quiet. And I was expecting at least there was going to be police choppers, military choppers, something to in the effect of assisting the people to tell them what their instructions were going to be, because there was no power at all. Most of the roads and infrastructure was completely destroyed. But what's interesting about this is I suspected it was a weather weapon used against Acapulco for the construction of a 15-minute city. But I wasn't sure. I didn't have full proof of this.
Hold on a second. I do want to return to that. Hold on just 1 second. But let me add for our viewers, you know, Acapulco is also a center of cryptocurrency and a lot of libertarian type of projects, including low energy nuclear reactions that you're involved with or covering. So, you know, you talk about, you know, cheap, affordable energy. You talk about a decentralized currency, Acapulco and other things, freedom of speech, freedom of political affiliation and so on. Acapulco is actually a hub for that. And this storm, from what I saw, I mean, it came out of nowhere and it became a Category 5 all of a sudden out of nowhere. But then I just want to add that. Go ahead with what you were about to say.
So when I left the state and walked around, because the first thing we thought of is, communications. And this is the most important part, because none of us were able to communicate anything to anybody at all. And I'd been saying to the people I was with for weeks in advance, I really need to get a satellite phone. And there was no communications. And that was the only thing that gave us word to the outside world what had happened, because everything had been cut off and people were totally in a state of shock. So I walked out into the streets and people didn't know how to respond because they were in a state of disbelief that the entire everything, houses, cars, telephone poles, it looked like a demilitarized zone after a war. But the one thing I noticed, which kind of confirmed to me, and I don't need to have any scientist or anybody else validate to me, is what happened in relation to the amount of energetic force it would take to blow out windows in cars that are sitting underneath ports. Any car that was outside, the windows were blown out. Okay. And most people have driven fast cars, you know, maybe over 100 or whatever, and the windows don't have any problem, and there's aerodynamics and all these other things. It was truly unusual to see that the glass in the cars looked like it exploded from some type of unusual electronic weapon of sorts. I couldn't believe what I saw. I could understand the poles and the palm trees being pulled out and all those other things. The windows inside the ports where the car were blown out all over the place.
But the building that you were in, being concrete, of course, it withstood the wind.
Yes.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. But I would imagine a lot of other people who did not have the shelter that you had They lost their homes. There had to be many, many deaths. I don't even know what those numbers are. Does anybody know what those numbers are yet?
No, because what we found out was when we saw the military show up many, many, many hours later, it took them a long time to get there. They weren't helping or assisting anybody whatsoever. And for many people there, including myself, I was thinking, okay, what are the comms here? What's going on? Are we going to be told? And they have no relation whatsoever to the public. They're there for themselves, and they were helping themselves, and there were choppers flying around later in the day, but nobody knew what was going on. I was expecting them to be patrolling the streets, which they were driving through the streets, but the only thing they were protecting was the military bank, their own bank.
Oh, wow.
Not anybody else's bank. Nobody else's bank was being protected.
Yeah, got to protect the gold vault.
I took a lot of film footage, and I knew what I saw there, that was a complete reset in action, shall we say, of the entire area.
What did you do for clean water? How did you eat?
Even? Well, we had stored water on the estate, and I was never personally like terrified that I wasn't going to make it out there, because some of the people that are with were restaurateurs and owners of restaurants, and we went to the restaurants to get the stored food there because we knew it was all going to go bad anyway. So we were going to pick up the wine, beer, water, whatever food they had, anything. And people started to think in survival mode. But again, the main problem was communications. We needed a satellite phone. I will never travel or go anywhere ever again without a satellite phone. I do realize now that was life or death for most people, because if people witnessed what I saw and my colleagues saw walking in the street, most of those people went from having a business and a home to nothing the next day, absolutely nothing.
Well, let me bring in then, when you contacted me and told me about this, I did reach out to Tina at the satellite phone store. And I'm happy to share with our audience that we're able to get you set up with a satellite phone that's all fully paid for your travels. And you're never going to be without communications again. And the satellite phone store, just as a full disclaimer, they are also, of course, a sponsor of my various shows and podcasts and so on. But this is typical of what they do. They get phones to first responders. They donate phones, or they lend phones very often when there are hurricanes in the United States and other countries. And sometimes they're completely out of satellite phones. Right now, they actually have inventory. So you, James, you have a phone waiting for you, I believe today, as soon as you get back to your house. And I want you to, when you get that, I want you to open it up, charge it up, use it, and then I'll arrange for you to call me on that sat phone so we can test it out, make sure it's all working. Does that sound okay?
I'm truly grateful, and thank you and Tina and everybody else. And I don't have any problem endorsing a satellite phone at all for any company. And the reason why is a lot of the people there, they needed to reach out and couldn't reach their families. They couldn't. There's other people I was with that were from different parts of the world, and they were trying to reach out to say we're live, because I was communicating with local residents and saying, well, somebody has a satellite phone here. Somebody's talking, because there's embassies over there. And I don't know for sure. And I'm sure there's a CIA hub there as well. And they have SATCOMs in Cancun because of that particular area and what it represents to Mexico in terms of the commerce. But it was the electronic registration, hard drives, anything having to do with finance, ownership of property, legal, it's gone. And when I started to put the pieces together, because I thought, okay, this, it just didn't seem like a natural event to me. And when I saw the ruins, I for sure, that place, I knew it was going to be renovated for the next people to take ownership of communications and infrastructure there. Now, the interesting part is I was in Mexico to... I was suggested that I go meet with presidential candidate Dr. Claudia Sheinbaum, who has a PhD in energy engineering. And I had mentioned it to some of my colleagues while I was there that, well, she's going to listen now to what I have to say.
Because
Cancun is, it's going to take 10 years to get it back to where it was. Not to mention a lot of the colleagues that I was with are totally dismayed by their current president, who wasn't even truly addressing the matter until it was way too late.
Let me bring in this pattern here that's happening, because Lahaina in Hawaii, which has been forgotten ever since the situation with Israel. But Lahaina was also this beautiful coastal town owned mostly by local Hawaiians. And of course, it was destroyed. Many people believe direct energy weapons were involved. It's very clear the government stood down. They turned off the water. They allowed fires to take over and obliterate a significant portion of the town. And also, by the way, you know, there are thousands of children that were missing. At least 1,000 are still missing. And I haven't heard a thing about those missing children ever since October 7th when Hamas attacked Israel. So, you know, if the globalists wanted to, you know, memory hole 1,000 children, that certainly was an easy way for them to do that. But what Acapulco and Lahaina have in common is they are these beautiful coastal cities. And we know that the globalists are actually running a Gaza-type experiment for all of humanity. And I've said even, like, the way Israel engineered Gaza to be an open-air concentration camp, you know, fully surveilled, border walls, nothing goes in and out without their permission, you know, restriction on calories even coming in, restriction on technology. That's the model for all of us. So do you think then that Acapulco is being targeted by globalists to be transformed into a controlled city system?
Yes. Now, because of the, now I'm very suspicious of the deals that were made behind the scenes, because I spoke to quite a few people down there that would have firsthand knowledge about the power structure for Mexico and who's really running the show, the cartels or the people running the cartels, or, you know, exactly what is going on, because who stands to gain by totally destroying everybody's lives in a beautiful city? But it makes sense based on what's going on. And I explained that to my colleagues and friends that were there, that they'd been exterminated and forgotten. Get out of the way. You're not part of this. And people went from having successful businesses and had positions within the culture of Acapulco to nothing in 24 hours.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah, and that was a wake-up call like never, ever before. And the people that I was with, the gentleman that I was with, actually saved my life and my person that I was with life by getting us out of there the second day. Because by the hour, looting, violence, threats of violence, stealing gas, and complete desperation was underway without the military really doing anything. And then the colleagues that I'm with are very influential people in Mexico. They were trying to explain to me, but there's no connection between the military and the government. And if there is, it's not for the people at all.
Right.
And
right.
I think that this is a wake-up call for Mexico, because I still have property in Acapulco that I need to go get. And when I go down there, I'm going to be having some meetings with the people that are extremely upset about this. Very, very angry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let me also mention that, of course, every country, this can happen anywhere.
Right.
To any city at any time. And the evil genius of weather weapons, or geoengineering, as it's often called, is that it can all be blamed on nature. So
right.
No government is fingered as the culprit or you know, launching the attack. And we just blame nature. But, you know, I've had Dane Wigington on the show many times. There are, yeah, you know, ionization technologies that alter weather patterns, that can steer moisture clouds, that can affect wind patterns, and so much more. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of patents in the U.S. Patent Office on weather control systems. It's not even a conspiracy theory anymore. It's right. openly written about across the media. So given that this can happen anywhere, none of us are really safe from the aims of whoever is running this. And I want to mention, getting back to the satellite phones real quick, what you just mentioned, where you were trying to find somebody with a satellite phone so that everybody could use that phone and, you know, contact a loved one and say, I'm okay, I'm still alive. That's exactly the way this tends to work. Oh, yeah, they're showing my screen. So that's the satellite phone store. Just go to sat123.com and you'll see some of these solutions. These are satellite text messaging devices here, the bivy sticks. And here's a solar power generator with a sat phone and a Faraday bag. Lots of other solutions. sat123.com. But the way it usually works, James, is that if a guy like you, if you had a sat phone there, then, you know, people would line up to use it and you would tell everybody, okay, you've got 2 minutes, right? Make your call, 2 minutes, hand it to the next person. You've got 2 minutes. And you would then be burning through, you know, your minutes. But with a satellite phone store, you get a certain number of minutes every month, and then they roll over to the next month and they start adding up and adding up, and you can save them up for a big emergency, and you can help 100 people, you know, to contact their loved ones.
If I had one there, at least 10 people would have gone boom, boom, boom.
Oh, I'm sure.
To call their, even if the all the phones in the local area were out, people were calling everybody in Mexico City to inform them what had happened, because it was specifically too quiet for too long in the morning. Something like this happens, I was expecting to hear choppers at 6 or 7 in the morning, and they didn't come for hours and hours and hours, and nobody knew anything that was going on, and it was a very uncomfortable position to be. The only saving grace for anybody under these conditions is having a satellite phone. And with what's going on currently in the world, it'd be a mistake not to have one.
Well, and let me mention this. This is the bivy stick. Now, I will not travel without this bivy stick. This little device here, it's about the size of an ice cream sandwich. And it's got a long battery life. And the satellite phone store has donated these to my buddies on the Texas border. And they use these because there's a little red button on the bottom. I don't know if you can see this in this photo. There's a little red button there. You actually have to open that up and press the button inside there. And you can set it up so that when you press that button, your GPS coordinates are emailed to your multiple contacts that you choose. So if you were needing a rescue and you don't know where you are and they don't know where you are, and this has been used by everybody from snowboarders and mountain climbers to soldiers and you know, special forces, you can press that button and the people that you want to have your coordinates, they get your coordinates. And so that's another emergency device. And you can send texts out with it as well. You can text anybody anywhere in the world through the satellites, as long as you can see the sky. But I imagine after the storm, you could see the sky.
Oh, without a doubt. It was the one thing to make everything work, to get everything moving and organized in terms of how to exit, what food to bring in, all that other stuff. We didn't have any comms whatsoever. And the Mexican people, including the people that are there, I imagine it's complete chaos there. I saw and have footage and heard phone calls of people directly involved with the military, including transcript messages of people talking to the second person next to the president there. And the people of Acapulco are not a priority at all.
Wow.
I'm very disgusted that a government would do that to its people and put them into the Stone Age, because the collateral damage of the city, it's done. Everything needs to start over there completely.
Yeah.
All the infrastructure, including the engineering of the buildings that withheld a lot of the force, they got to be taken down. And there probably was hundreds of people that have flown out the windows because of all the glass, and every major hotel just about was all shattered out.
Oh,
all the cars were shattered out, everything. It was,
almost like a detonation happened or something. Huh? That's crazy.
Yeah. I when I was walking down the street looking at the cars, and they were in under garages, parked.
I mean, did you hear a loud boom?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or was it just wind?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was some, they used some type of weaponry with the Category 5 to get those effects with the glass shattering. Because there was one person that I know personally that they were in their apartment and the window exploded inward and sliced their face on the top. And there's just glass everywhere. For anybody that was, you know, older person, probably didn't survive, and they were lying about the numbers. And I looked at the Mockingbird news they put out the next day saying 27 people were killed. No, and these amount they're missing, we were all laughing at that and saying, what a total lie. It's just so sick that when people are in a complete state of vulnerability and crisis, that they're betrayed by their misleaders.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mean to criticize the Mexican people. I'm criticizing people that are in elected employee positions, whether it's Mexico, the United States, or anywhere else. When something like this happens, they're expected to come through. And personally, if I were anywhere around these people in Mexico, even as an American, I would have just gone off on these people. And I will go off on these people when I get back over there.
Well,
certain amount of them, because they should have been there within hours.
Absolutely.
Choppers announcing on speakers what was going on.
But I do want to mention
curtailing the violence, too.
The Mexican people, however, to their credit, are very practical and resilient, and they help each other.
Yes.
And they have a lot more practical skills than do most Americans, by the way. And so, you know, I lived in South America, and I've been through, you know, Mexico and Panama and Costa Rica and Bolivia and Peru, wherever. And that's the one thing I've always noticed about Central and South Americans is how practical they are, right? So they can solve a lot of problems. They're all the men are handymen in essence. And a lot of the men know how to grow food, by the way. But if this were to happen in an American city, the people would be even more helpless because they don't know where does the water come from? How do you filter water? You know, how do you rewire the electricity? I mean, the typical American has no clue about any of that stuff. And whereas the Mexican people, there's always a guy who can rewire the electricity. You know, it's the guy that lives two doors down. You know, as long as he's okay, he can redo it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's a can-do attitude. Actually, as much as there is clearly corruption with the government and the narcos and all that dynamic and the military, but you know, thank God the Mexican people still have a sense of being able to get things done. Whereas, you know, if a city in California got hit, or Portland or Seattle, people would be clueless.
Clueless. They're one thing I did notice is that there is still there, and it's almost startling to see it. There's a sense of community and family there that's
right.
Really, really tight. And I notice after talking to a lot of people there that their friends and people around them, they've known them for 35, 40 years since they were children. And they're all very tight. They all help each other. They all make each other aware of what's going on. There's this that sense of community and brotherhood, sisterhood that's there. So that will see them through, though when I did talk to residents there, I said, well, now who owns what? Who stood to gain by destroying all the hard drives,
right,
all the banking information, all their ownership, not to mention what that's going to mean for the courts and for who's going to own what when they put in the new infrastructure.
Well, wait, why are you saying that all the banking records are destroyed?
Say again?
Why are you saying that all the banking records are destroyed?
Because of the hard drives, information on hard drives.
But wouldn't hard drives have survived this?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, not there. The state of preparation there, I just didn't see it. And I don't think the banks, even though there are some Western companies there, and there's a noticeable some chain stores there. The banks, I don't think, are prepared to deal with that type of energy outage. Well, not to mention, if something was tied in with that Category 5, which I think there was, those records are gone.
I mean, it could have been like an EMP or something
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I'm not saying that's definitely happened. I don't know. Yeah, I'm just saying it could be. Well, but yeah. Let me mention, by the way, then, that for those people watching, I've covered this before on my podcast, but, you know, hard drives are not a very good storage medium because they are magnetic and they lose, they actually lose about 1% of the storage bits every year because it loses the polarity. And there is parity in the data. So there is a checksum data recovery mechanism that is built into the hardware layer. That's why you don't normally see the losses, but hard drives lose data over time. The best way to store data long-term is optical. So you burn it onto, optical medium, like a Blu-ray DVD, and optical media can survive floods, EMPs, you know, everything. Some of them you can buy online right now, optical media that claim a 1,000 year lifespan. And that's no joke, because the laser burns pits into the plastic, and that plastic is going to be around for 1,000 years. So you're not losing that data. So for those of you watching, if you're concerned about, you know, how to prevent data loss, well, let me also add, sorry to take up time, James, but this is an area where I do have a lot of knowledge. Tape backup is orders of magnitude more reliable than hard drives, believe it or not. Tape, just straight up. I mean, Hewlett Packard and a bunch of companies make modern tape drives that can store something like 30 terabytes of data on one cartridge. It's fast and it's way more resilient than hard drives, but optical is the most resilient. It can even survive, you know, warlike conditions as long as the optical disc itself isn't melted or burned up, you've got your data. So just mentioning that.
Totally agree. This is a wake up call for me. I never thought I'd be in something like this, but it was an experience I'll never forget, because I was there for one reality, and then the next day that reality was gone.
Right.
I'm probably one of the few people in the world that experienced that, because we flew in that evening and to get there. And I was looking forward to kind of checking out the city the next day, because I saw the bay and I had heard so many stories about Acapulco and so forth. And then the boat that I was on, everything sank. All the boats in the harbor were just sunk. I couldn't believe the devastation, because that I didn't go outside when it was at its most powerful.
yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, because the really is the tree in front of the home, which was a kind of famous tree in front of this residence, because it had been there for hundreds of years. It kind of covered the entire house to a certain extent, and the whole thing was just stripped.
Wow.
Everything. The amount of force mixed with something else took that whole city down with relative ease. But it's the now, way James, it was handled afterwards. I'm suspect of how that was done. So it's a disaster. It's a total disaster.
We know. Let's take this to a bigger picture, and let's talk about low energy nuclear reactions, because we know that the globalists of our world, they will carry out any number of crimes against humanity in order to keep the human race suppressed. They want to keep everybody down, and they want to deny the human race access to technology, and specifically cold fusion technology, which hopefully our audience is at least somewhat up to speed, but it was initially demonstrated by Fleischmann and Pons in 1989. It's been replicated in hundreds of labs all around the world. It's been studied by the U.S. Navy. It's been replicated in labs in Russia, in Japan, in China, all over. You've tracked this perhaps more closely than any other person, certainly that I know. And it seems like this technology is on the verge of being commercialized and released upon the world as, I'm not going to call it free energy, because it's not free energy.
Right.
You do have to feed it mass, which is heavy water, but it's dirt cheap energy. You turn seawater into electricity without combustion and with no carbon being released, no nuclear material, no radiation, nothing like that. Where does low energy nuclear reaction technology stand today? And how do you think that it plays in with the globalist agendas that we're talking about?
Well, the last time I was on talking to you about it, not too long thereafter, a big, big change occurred in that entire field. And I got a friendly call and a friendly suggestion from two or three people, actually, to stop talking about that stuff. And it wasn't an order, it was a suggestion. And it was kind of like, thanks for your help. We'll take it from here type of thing. But I can assure everybody here, the train has left the station. And the reason why I was in Mexico in the first place, it was suggested to me by U.S. veterans that are currently living in Mexico to go and talk to Dr. Claudia Sheinbaum, who's set to be the next president of Mexico, because she's a scientist that got her PhD in engineering, energy engineering specifically, and has been very public about environmental issues and written lots of papers and I believe two books on the subject. And I was there specifically and I talked to some very influential people as soon as I arrived in Mexico City, actually, about that. And I'd mentioned and will continue to mention what those effects are going to be for Mexico, because she probably, I don't know her position until I talk to her in person, but it's been suggested that Mexico implement this since they're probably going to be the best partners for the United States. And when the last time I did speak to you, I got emails from some pretty influential people from military families, industrious families, that had mentioned to me that, yes, this technology does exist and that there is going to be a rollout. And in fact, I got claims from other people that I know that this technology is being utilized in another state on a much larger level. I don't have proof of that, though they'd love for me to talk about it just to get the publicity about it. But I do know from the people actively that I know that have been involved that the tremendous shift has taken place. And that being said, it's enough now that people can expect and should demand that this type of energy be available to the public. Because for Mexico and specifically Acapulco, that's, I have to go back to Mexico City, and I intend to discuss this with her before she's elected to determine on the record for Mexico and for all those involved, not just Mexico, but to everybody involved, that this LENR technology be adopted.
Let me interrupt you, James. I want to bring something in that's relevant to this. I apologize for interrupting you because your information is critical here. But I want to show on the screen here, there was just an announcement from Westinghouse about this eVinci microreactor. Now, this is conventional nuclear technology. But what it shows is that this very small reactor, there's the size of it. I mean, maybe it's hard to see, but that it would fit in a garage, like a typical household garage. And but yet this provides the kilowatt rating on this. I think it was up to 5 megawatts of power, and you only have to change fuel every 8 years. Yeah, here it is, five megawatts with a 13 megawatt core design. Okay, so 8 years before you have to change the fuel. Now, I know this is not cold fusion. This is, you know, traditional nuclear energy that produces fuel. But the reason I bring this up is because we're seeing other announcements like this, including not too long ago, one from Raytheon, that shows that the idea of decentralized small-scale power is actually about to be rolled out by the major manufacturers of nuclear technology, including, in this case, Westinghouse. Now, LENR can fit exactly in this model. So, in other words, when a town decides to run itself on a micro reactor like this eVinci micro reactor, it's only a matter of time before they can replace that with a cold fusion reactor that
Certainly.
Does the same thing.
And it'll probably be a lot cheaper as well.
A lot cheaper and a lot more safe, and it doesn't have any, you know, toxic radio.
LANR is should be viewed as and discussed when people think about it as we're making a partnership with the planet and a partnership with water. That's what we're doing, is we're returning back to our source. And the reason it's been fought for so long is because that partnership has to do with a lot of people would agree, some people with different philosophies, that that is the way to go, that we have to create a new partnership with the planet in order to survive as we continue to grow. And when you're just using heavy water and small doses of it to create that much type of energy, it's clean, it's sustainable, it's the right way to roll.
Yes. And let me mention, James, everything that we're seeing in the Middle East right now would be irrelevant if the world wasn't running on fossil fuels. Because let's make no mistake, the entire right. reason the U.S. is backing Israel has to do with oil. I mean, it's to have, Israel's a proxy state for the U.S., for the West, to have a presence in the Middle East in order to protect its oil supply. That's what this is.
Yes.
All right. And Hamas was created by, you know, Israeli and U.S. intelligence, or mostly Israeli intelligence, and funded by Israel and so on, but directed, influenced by U.S. intelligence. So if we had clean, truly green, sustainable, renewable energy, which is low energy nuclear reactions, we don't need any wars in the Middle East.
And, what I've always said.
Yeah, I know. You have said that. And Mexico in particular, Mexico could experience a golden age of an industrial revolution without pollution.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. And they can be independent as they wish to be, as many of the people that I met with there. Some of them are aware of this whole globalist operation, but not as many as I thought. It's not a topic of discussion. It will be now, because this archive will be seen by a lot of influential people in Mexico.
Yes.
I guarantee you that.
Yes.
I guarantee you that for sure. Because I this is the direct chapter to open up that door and begin those discussions.
Yeah, and for the benefit of those watching, because you and I, James, we've done a lot of other interviews more about the tech of Leonard technology. But I do want to say to those people watching, Leonard does not violate the laws of physics in any way. It is entirely consistent with the laws of physics. It's a low energy fusion that converts a very tiny amount of mass into energy in the form of excess heat. That's what it is.
Correct.
And it, because of the special chemistry and the elemental makeup and the micro fissures and everything that's in the, is it referred to as the cathodes that are suspended in water?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The cathode composition is the secret to this. And from that, you get excess heat. So you can heat water, you can boil water, you can produce steam, you can drive turbines. The only outputs are heat and water, and that's it.
Right. And let me go back to, because I know the emphasis for most people's attention span is this whole war thing going on. I've said it before, I'll say it again, and most people know this that are in the technical community, have any clue about what's really going on and our true technical position that we're in. War is obsolete. It's mostly about conflicts having to do with territory and energy resources. This fixes that issue. So
yes.
And I see all this nonsense going on. It's nonsense, and it's done for a reason. And we're technologically way past that, way, way past that. Most people know that I talk with, and they know all of this nonsense that's going on. It doesn't need to exist at all. And
right.
We should use some things. There's a lot of bad effects from technology, but there's a lot of good effects from technology as well. Some of those good effects allow us to be independent, not pollute the environment. We don't need warfare anymore because we're living in a state of abundance. Most of the people that are involved in the planning and understanding of this, they're not in the consciousness of lack at all.
Right.
That doesn't exist. Once people and The people of Mexico and other people in the world understand that we're not in that position anymore. And what they see in the media environments is reflective of something that's like so obsolete, it doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah. Let me paint a picture here, James, because using Lenner technology, once it is properly commercialized, you could have a small unit attached to your house, kind of like an air conditioning unit that you currently have. And that unit is just constantly producing power on demand as you need it. It would probably be tied to a lithium battery bank to help buffer power draws in case somebody turns on the hairdryer and a blender and whatever all at the same time. But you're going to have a hybrid system attached to your home, and you'll be able to cut the power lines. You won't need the power grid. And similarly, in a vehicle, you will have trucks that roll down the highway, and on that truck will be an onboard cold fusion generator that is recharging the batteries of the truck as it is driving and as it is parked. It's recharging. So you don't have to stop at recharging stations. You may have to pause your driving and just, you know, stop for a couple hours and let it regenerate depending on, you know, the size of the system. And I'm not saying, folks, that it exists in that form right now, but all we need is mechanical engineers, frankly, and some physicists, and some consumer product engineers to put these pieces together. The technology exists. They can make that happen. And the world would be set free in so many ways, and food would become incredibly affordable to people because food prices are directly related to energy prices. So when transportation prices go way down, and when you don't have war in the Middle East controlling our access to energy, when all of a sudden every farmer in, you know, even in Ethiopia can have his or her own energy system right there to drive even small, simple electric vehicles, all of a sudden food is abundant as well. So it solves so many problems.
The world changes. The media ecological effects of utilizing a technology like this, we don't need conflicts anymore. We should be past all of that. That's why when I see all of this division and aggression and nonsense, like we're still in the caveman era, it's a lie. And people need to realize that the technological breakthroughs exist today, but they've got to be demanded, and the general public needs to be aware of it. And they need to demand it, and they need to discuss it with their elected employees and officials and circulate that information. This is why this network and you and all of this, I have to say it because it's true. It was this network and you that changed the future of this country because of discussing this tech. It did have that much of an effect because I know who reached out to certain people and what happened. And now the floodgates have opened. And now we should expect in the next 2, 3, 4 years, big changes. First, probably in the heating market first.
Right.
But that being said, with the critical infrastructure of rebuilding cities and everything now, it can be totally different, and it can be better.
I have advocated this technology. In fact, I think the way you found out about me was I was talking about it on my own anyway, and then you heard about it and reached out. That was years ago, and since then we've covered it quite a few times. But I do want to emphasize, I want to be one of the first paying customers of the boiler system, because I run a boiler, by the way. I run a boiler on my ranch that circulates hot water to heat my building. And then I have another one that heats my barn for my animals. And then I just blow the heat out using radiators. But I burn wood to generate heat to circulate hot water. So I'm running a boiler. I can just swap out the wood with a cold fusion system with a little bit of engineering and welding probably and whatever. And then I can just feed it, you know, heavy water instead of wood. And I only need, you know, this much heavy water for the whole winter. Right?
Yeah, I know the first unit that will be given away to the public will be put in the Russell Means Library, the American Indian Russell Means.
Oh, wow.
And the Lakota Sioux government has already had this technology on the books, and I've talked about it in public for quite some time, but Russell Means was really the first public figure to come out and take a stand on this, because he wanted it on American Indian land, because the indigenous culture, not only in Mexico, but in America, headed by the Lakota Sioux, and endorsed this quite some time ago. Most of America ignores what they're doing, but they're way ahead of everybody.
Well, the powers that be are so stuck in the fossil fuel era that they can't even see that they're being made obsolete. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. And you know what's even funny? Like, Russia has developed a nuclear-powered loitering cruise missile. The fuel source for the missile is nuclear. And so that missile can fly around for months, just hanging out in the air, cruising around, just using up some nuclear energy. That's a revolutionary application of a traditional nuclear system. I'm not saying that cold fusion could do that. Cold fusion probably doesn't have the energy density, you know, to match that. But for things on the ground, heating water, heating buildings, heating schools, heating military bases, heating homes, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's just, why wouldn't we do this?
Right.
We only have about a minute left, James. I'm sorry. What do you want to leave us with in wrapping this up? And I apologize. I've interviewed you. I've interrupted you so many times. I apologize for that.
I'm always happy to hear what you have to say, because you're one of the few people that put it together. Not many people put it together, but you did. So credit to you. But I would say, first and foremost, thank your sponsors for supplying me with a sat phone. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. And remind everybody, don't get into yourself in a situation where you don't have the ability to communicate with people. It's a life or death situation.
Yes.
And you need to be able to reach out. You need to take action immediately. So I hopefully, when it becomes available, I'm going to be circulating this archive throughout the Mexican culture. And I'll also be doing some press in Mexico regarding this and the discussion of LENR in terms of their energy infrastructure and future. So as soon as I participate in all that, I'll be sure to let you know.
Okay. Thank you for keeping us informed, James. And we're really grateful that you made it out of Acapulco with your life and limbs intact. Yeah. I mean, wow. And thank you for taking time to join us today. And we want to thank the sponsor, Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. And James, you will never have to travel without a satellite phone ever again. So that's at least one less thing to worry about.
Right. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Now you just have to worry about all the oil people trying to shut down, you know, cold fusion.
Right.
You've been dealing with that for years. All right. Well, thank you for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. And keep in touch. Let me know when you get the phone. We'll test it.
Right on. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James. And thank all of you for watching. Of course, this is Mike Adams here at Brighteon.com. We are the platform, I think, that talks the most about low-energy nuclear reactions and how this can revolutionize the world. It really is a game changer for peace, abundance, and liberty all over the world. So we'll have James back, and we'll talk more about this as the technology gets developed and deployed into the civilian and military markets in the years ahead. Thank you for watching today. Feel free to repost this interview on other platforms and channels. And thank you for watching today. God bless you all. Take care. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you, simply because I want like-minded people to survive.